USA Insulation, 513-381-3626, 513-381-FOAM, USA Insulation.
55 KRC on demand. Hear Brian Thomas weekdays 5 till 9 a.m. on 55 KRC, the talk station.
8:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday. Brian Thomas here, reminding you to stop by the web, 55krc.com, stream the audio, download iHeartRadio software, and run a podcast in case you didn't get to hear it. Talk to Jeff Davis at 7:40. He had some good things to say. And right now I have on the telephone Matt Mayer from the Heritage Foundation. Matt's good to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian.
Let me just read one quick paragraph here and set the stage, because you want to bring to a little bit of information about Ohio's right to work. Now, I was looking at a couple articles on this. Of course, Indiana just passed right to work legislation, and the folks in Minnesota were considering as well. And listen to this. A public opinion poll taken in December found that 73% of Minnesota voters favor a right-to-work constitutional amendment. Even better yet, and oddly enough, 69% of union households are in support of one. Wait a minute. That doesn't sound statistically accurate if you listen to the union folks. Matt, tell us about it.
It is accurate. You know, we did a poll 2 years ago when I was the president of the Buck Institute, where we polled Ohioans, and we had 88% of Ohioans in support of workplace freedom and even a high degree of union members. And the reason why is because they recognize we're in a different environment than we were 30, 40 years ago. It's a globally competitive environment, and they'd rather have a job than not a job. And the reality is the right-to-work states are actually growing jobs better. They have a stronger GDP growth, stronger per capita income growth. No matter what measure you want to use, they're doing better than the kind of blue states that Ohio and the other forced unionization states are.
Well, I guess it makes sense that unions have outlived their usefulness. I mean, look at this. You've got OSHA now, and that goes with you wherever state you are. You've got employment discrimination laws, age discrimination, sex, race discrimination. You've got Americans with Disability Act protecting all the workers from everything under the sun, even things that aren't even disabilities. I mean, what point do unions have at this juncture, Matt?
Two points, really. One, to drive up cost in terms of labor costs, and two, to create inflexibility in the workplace, right, and to make sure we can't fire bad employees, and to say, hey, you know, if there's a slowdown and we need somebody to grab a broom and sweep a floor, you know, in the unionized workplace, they're going to say, heck no, I'm going to file an unfair labor practice because you're going to make me do something that's outside my job code. That kind of silliness needs to end, because, you know, we can't compete in America if we're going to be a kind of a creature of the 1970s or the 1930s even.
Well, it's the idea of choice, and you hear it from the left, depending on what this subject matter you're talking about, but it just makes perfect sense in a freedom-loving, liberty-loving country like America is supposed to be, that no American worker should either be prohibited from joining a union or required to join one as a condition of employment. And that goes for union members as well. Union members at least having the ability to decide whether or not they want to contribute, because much of the money that unions take in is sent to, well, political contributions and campaign ads that may run afoul of what that particular union member believes in.
Yeah, and unions are the single greatest special interest in America. They spend more on elections over the last 20 years than any other interest group in the country, including big corporations, big banks, you name it. Big labor outspend everybody enormously, because, you know, they are vested in maintaining their controls of power so that the union bosses can continue to live the high life.
Well, and I always like to point out to my union friends that, yeah, I mean, you may believe in that your union has a purpose and a point. It may be because they offer a pension, or maybe because of the structure that Matt Mayer just talked about in terms of the job, but who's living large off of your dollars, okay? Just look at it. Who's living large off your dollars? It seems to me to be fundamentally unfair in one of these brotherhood situations where everybody's supposed to be working for each other.
Yeah, and let's give your listeners some numbers here, because, I mean, people like to just kind of throw things around. So here's the reality. From 1990 until last month, the states that you're forced to join a union, like Ohio, have averaged about 12% growth in terms of job creation. In states where they protect the rights of workers, they've gone up 36%, so almost three times the kind of job growth. The states like Ohio that are forced unionization have 65 million more people living in those states, but they created about 4 million fewer jobs over the last 22 years. And I could go on. You look at per capita real GDP growth over the last 20 years. Right-to-work states had 69% growth. Forced unionization states, only 60% growth. Ohio was the 45th worst state during that period of time, came in at 52% growth, so worse than most other states. Per capita income, one of the things that the union guys like to say is, you know, it's the right to work for less. That per capita income growth for the last decade in states that protect the workers' right to choose, 38% growth. In forced unionization states like Ohio, 34%. Ohio, even worse, only 26%. And so you think about these things, right, and you look at Ohio. In 1930, Ohio was 19% above the national average in terms of per capita income. Today, it's 9% below the national average. Those kinds of numbers need to change, and that's why Mitch Daniels, who's not a right-winger, Mitch Daniels, after being governor for two terms, said, you know what, I've seen it firsthand, the loss of companies, our inability to attract companies because of the unionization issue. I want Indianans to have jobs and the right to choose. We're going to make this happen, and he did.
And he did, and with flying colors, too, and I presume that that's going to be spelled a bad thing for the state of Ohio, because let's face it, it's a lot easier for an Ohio business, I would imagine, to move just over the state line there into Indiana and enjoy a little bit more liberty and freedom in terms of worker choice than stay in the state of Ohio. Now, we had an effort. Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, just to your point, Brian, I mean, just up north in Toledo, about a year and a half ago, you remember, Continental Plastics moved from Ohio to Indiana because of a little regulatory Ohio EPA issue on that would have cost them $500,000. You don't think if they were going to move, if a company would move from Ohio to Indiana because of a little regulatory issue like that, they're not going to move over a broader issue like the ability to control their workplace, to you know, control labor costs? I mean, it's going to happen, and we're going to watch it bleed if we don't make some, you know, significant changes here in Ohio.
Which leads us to the point of your call here today, not just discuss the general concept, which is absolutely worthy to set the stage, but let's talk specifically about workplace freedom. Ohio Workplace Freedom Amendment, that's what we're pushing now, and you're behind it, you and some other good people. SB 5 didn't work. How's workplace freedom different?
Workplace freedom is different because workplace freedom is about protecting the rights of workers, similar in some ways, frankly, to the way the union said that the SB 5 was really taking rights away from workers. This is simply saying we're going to give rights to workers so they have the ability to choose. And you know, I don't want to take credit. This has really been pushed by you know, Maurice Thompson over at 1851, Chris Littleton,
right,
Tea Party Group, and then Brian Williams at ABC. You know, I've supported them and helped them as I can, providing data and information. But this is a movement afoot. It's now in the process of gathering signatures. You know, it could be 2012, it could be 2013, it could be 2014. But as the poll data that you mentioned out of Minnesota and the poll data I've seen in Ohio over the last 2 years, this is something that Ohioans want because they know fundamental to our Constitution is the right to choose whether or not you want to associate with an entity or a group or not. And that is at the core basis of this whole push.
And the whole push is involving the amendment. Let me just go ahead and tell folks what the proposed amendment would provide in Ohio. It says, no law, rule, or agreement or arrangement shall require any person or employer to become or remain a member of a labor union. No law, rule, or agreement or arrangement shall require, directly or indirectly as a condition of employment, any person or employer to pay or transfer dues, fees, assessments, or other charges of any kind or anything else of value to a labor organization or third party in lieu of the labor organization. And finally, any person directly or indirectly affected by or threatened with any harm by a violation of this section may bring civil or equitable action to enforce this section. So you've already factored in the anticipation that the union guys are going to be beating up on people or maybe threatening them directly or indirectly if they don't continue to voluntarily pay the union dues.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in reality, this is about jobs. I mean, when you look at manufacturing GDP in America over the last 10 years, in states, in the top 20 states that had the greatest growth, the 13 out of 20 of those states were states that protect workplace freedom. The bottom 20 states, 15 out of 20 of those, were forced unionization states like Ohio, which was the 50th worst state in terms of manufacturing GDP percent change. So, again, you see it happening every day. Companies that are going, you know, Continental Tire, Bridgestone, new billion-dollar facilities down in South Carolina, Boeing down in South Carolina, car companies down in Alabama, down in Mississippi. You see this happening again and again. We can't even compete for those facilities because we are known as one of the most pro-labor states in the country, which means high cost and even worse, inflexibility in the workplace, and that's even worse in today's competitive environment where you need to be able to shift and change based upon the various factors going on in the global environment.
Talking with Matt Mayer of the Heritage Foundation, he's a fellow there. We're talking about Ohio Workplace Freedom Amendment. Can you stick around, Matt? I'd like to take a quick 60-second break, give my listeners a weather update and a traffic report. I got a few questions to ask you, namely, what is the main argument the unions have against this other than they're being picked on? So stick around. Fox 19 Storm Tracker forecast. Light snow showers this morning, an inch or less of snow. Going to be cloudy this afternoon with passing rains now. Rain and snow mixed. It's kind of a slushy mix. 39 for a high. Tonight, clearing skies and 28. Tomorrow, partly sunny and 45. It's 33 right now at 55 KRCD Talk Station.
Southbound 71 still on and off slow from Ronald Reagan Highway through the Kenwood Cut in the hill. Once you pass Red Bank, it starts to open up a bit. I'm looking at 71 at Dana. You're fine here. South 75 still crowded in Butler County from Sinday Road to 275 and a little slow through Lachlan as well. 471 still need extra time from Grand to the river. In northbound 75, you're still going to need about 10 to 12 extra minutes from Buttermilk to the bridge. Dave Armbruster with traffic, sponsored by Watson's, for all the fun on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Just shy of 8:17, 55 KRC, the talk station. My guest, Matt Mayer, the Heritage Foundation, talking about Ohio workplace freedom. And, you know, it's certainly a concept that resonates with me. The idea of giving the laborer, the person, the choice whether or not to contribute to unions, and I can't find anything un-American or wrong with that. What's the main argument that you get from the unions against the idea of giving people choice and freedom?
It really comes down to their little cliche of the right to work for less, and that their argument is, you know, if without unions, you know, big bad companies are going to kind of oppress the worker. And look, you know, you said this at the beginning of the show. We have a lot to thank for the labor movement. But for the labor movement in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, 40s, we would not have had a lot of the important reforms that needed to happen in the workplace in America.
Right.
But the reality is, as you said, we now have so many statutory, constitutional, and other protections on wage and hour, OSHA, discrimination, you name it, that frankly, on top of that, when you put labor unions, all you're adding is an unnecessary and anti-competitive cost structure, and you're forcing the individual to do something they shouldn't do. And this goes from the poor little 16-year-old who wants to get a job bagging groceries at Kroger that's forced to join the union to work there,
yeah,
all the way up to the guy up in, you know, Northwest Ohio or Northeast Ohio that's been out of a job because the unions are so strong that they chase away good companies. And again, this is one of the things where that's why union members support these initiatives, because they understand they'd rather have a weaker union but a job that has income coming in, that has a growing income base. Again, those numbers I gave you, that per capita real income is growing stronger in states that protect worker freedom than in states like Ohio that force unionization. So this is an issue that resonates because people want a job, they want to promote prosperity for their family, and they know those jobs being created at a greater pace in places south and west of the U.S., not in the Northeast.
And we know the Ohio legislature is not going to move forward with this, having been kicked in the shorts with SB 5. They don't want to create an issue for Democrats this fall, but this is a ballot initiative that the voters of the state of Ohio can easily have put on, and that comes from efforts through OhioansForWorkplaceFreedom.com, and that's the place where we can find out all the information, correct, Matt?
Yep, that's right.
And we need, or the state of Ohio, or the initiative needs, how many signatures in order to make it to the ballot?
Just over 300,000. So that process just began, and it'll take time. I mean, this is one of those things where, just like the Healthcare Freedom Act,
yeah,
it's a grassroots citizen or initiative. It's not going to be big labor or big corporations that are funding this stuff. This is really something that's going to be a grassroots organization, a grassroots movement that makes sure that it resonates in a broad-based fashion in all 88 counties, so that when it does get on the ballot, we're going to see it succeed. Because, as you know, labor unions poured in $42 million to stop SB 5. Imagine how much they're going to pour in to stop an amendment like this that would protect the rights of workers to choose.
Well, and I'll tell you what, the argument against SB 5 is a lot easier to make, because the SB 5 was a lot more complicated. It had a lot more bills and intertwining that needed to be done, which is why it was very complicated. It had to be, because so many laws had to be impacted and changed.
Right.
So this is simple. This is about freedom and liberty, and this is about protecting the workers' right to join or not. And I will embrace that as a libertarian, or as a conservative.
You bet.
Democrats could embrace this, but for the siphoning off of potential campaign contributions, this sounds something like that the left would be really in favor of. Imagine if there was a right-wing union.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. Well, there used to be, the unions did used to support conservatives from time to time, but, you know, over the last decade or two, they've just gotten almost to be, you know, nearly 100% of all their money goes to Democrats, and they've become really kind of bedfellows with the Democrats. And look, there are lots of folks that know the Democratic Party has a strong tradition, and that tradition has been really kind of undermined by their tie to big labor. So they really need to move away from big labor in a way that starts protecting the individual and get back to their core thing that they you know were created as a party to become, and not be so tied to an interest group like big labor.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, I really appreciate you spending the time with me talking about the Workplace Freedom Amendment. Matt Mayer of the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you.
Regularly rely on the information. I encourage people to get in touch with the Heritage Foundation and find out, because you guys do some great work there and you stay on top of it.
Hey, thanks.
Have a fantastic week, Matt Mayer, 821-55 KRC, the talk station.
Now comes the truth and the reality part.
Sean Hannity. Today after Rush, 55 KRC. The talk station.
Just shy of 824 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Very happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas here. Hope you're enjoying the morning show so far. Great talking to Jeff Davis at 740. Of course, I thoroughly enjoy talking to Matt about the right to work, because, again, it's liberty, it's freedom, it's choice. That's all this is about. Coming up after the next break, Ben Swan from Channel 19's Reality Check. It's going to give you a little clue and reality check on a couple of things to be talking about on Reality Check. Healthcare mandates won, religious freedom. Got the main caucus situation. Enjoy talking to Ben. We're going to be doing a regular thing with Ben once a week, finding out what he is up to. Ask the expert, Dr. Randall Wolf of the Atrial Fibrillation Center of Cincinnati. He's going to be joining me at 8:50. Seriously, if you know somebody with AFib or you have atrial fibrillation and you know how much it sucks, tune in at 8:50. Dr. Wolf's got some information for you you're going to want to hear. And he'll stick around after the top of the close of the morning show at 9 o'clock and answer any questions that you might have. So he'll be taking questions. And real quick, the reason I brought up Minnesota Right to Work, before we dive on out for the next segment, the governor of the state of Minnesota, Democrat, he did not want to pass the bill. Democratic Governor Mark Dayton.
By 2016.
And with total internet he claimed reaching 3 billion, that he knows the people of Minnesota better than that, better than someone who would just put a bill through. He said they don't even take the bills up with anybody else. They just ram them through. This is the Republicans he's referring to. So they can go home and think that somehow that's going to appeal to the people of Minnesota. Well, I know the people of Minnesota better than that. That's his quote, except as the article points out, he doesn't. And that's the statistic I talked about with Matt. 73% of Minnesota voters favor right to work constitutional amendment, and 69% of union households supported it. How about that? I guess maybe he doesn't know his own constituents. 825, 55 KRC, the talk station.
Track of Obama's excuses. It's like playing a nonstop game of whack-a-mole.
Sean Hannity.
You know, we've been a little bit lazy, I think.
Blaming Americans.
The way Bush has done
today
it over
at 3
the
on 55 KRC, the talk station.
830. 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas here and back in the program. We talked to him last week, talked to him this week, going to talk to him next week. Ben Swan, anchor for Channel 19. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you back on.
Thanks, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
Doing fantastic. This week on your reality check, what are you going to be covering? Because I see right in front, let's talk about the healthcare mandate. I'm glad you're diving on into this one, Ben.
Yeah, taking a look at that because I think there's a kind of a bigger issue here. Obviously, last week there was a lot of discussion about the Catholic Church and whether or not the president was violating their freedom of religious liberty. But there is a bigger issue here, because keep in mind that the president's resolution to this was to say, look, the Catholic institutions, such as universities or hospitals, are not going to be forced to directly pay for contraception. Instead, he's going to make sure that the insurance companies pay for it. Okay.
Right.
The only problem with that is that's like saying, well, don't worry, the government will pay for it.
Right.
Because who's paying for the insurance companies? We are, right?
Exactly. You know, even if it's an infinitesimal amount by compared to what your current premium is, they're going to put the cost of birth control into the premium. Everybody is going to be paying for it.
Absolutely. One of the things that people don't realize, or they don't seem to realize, is that under this Affordable Care Act, once we hit 2014, there is this pool of money that everyone's paying into. And as with all bureaucracies, you have a government system that says, now we'll take money out of that pool and we'll designate who's worthy of it and who isn't. So in the event that you are an individual, maybe a Catholic, maybe a Protestant, maybe an agnostic who simply does not believe that you should be paying for morning after pills or for contraception for other people, it doesn't really matter under this setup whether or not that violates your quote-unquote religious liberty, because according to what they're doing, well, you're not an institution. See, the president uses some terminology that's kind of interesting. He talks all the time about the freedom to worship.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard him say that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He talks about that all the time. But there is an important use of that phrase, because freedom to worship is not the same thing as the free exercise of religion. If you listen to a lot of the terminology that progressives use when they talk about worship, worship is an act that takes place in some kind of a formal setting, i.e. attending Catholic Mass, going to a mosque, being at a synagogue. That is worship. Free exercise of religion means that I am allowed to exercise freely according to my convictions and my belief system. That doesn't necessarily happen within the context of some kind of a corporate religious institution.
It would be the parallel I would think is they allowed conscientious objectors to avoid the draft, right?
Right.
I mean, it's an exception. It's an exclusion. You don't believe in war and you're not going to make you go. I guess my question, Ben, and I can hear this argument, our taxes, whether you're Catholic, Protestant, optimistic, Zen, existentialist, Druid, it doesn't matter. You have a core set of beliefs, doctrines, and dogma that you follow or you don't, but they're there and they're your religion. Your tax dollars are always used for something that conflicts with your religion, whether it be paying for war if you believe you don't believe in war, or in fact, our country regularly funds and pays for abortions. Heck, we fund Planned Parenthood with taxes.
Well, and therein lies the problem, because when you start to redefine what the free exercise of religion is, which we've been doing in this country for about 100 years.
Yeah.
We've been redefining what that looks like. When you do that, then you can make the argument that, look, you know, taxes go into this pool and these are used by the government for general welfare of society, and we can't nitpick every single one. The problem is that maybe the problem isn't religious belief. Maybe the problem is the pool of money the government continually pulls from people to say, well, we're going to designate where it goes and we'll decide what is religious belief and what is not, and what is worship and what is not.
So exactly.
There's a much bigger issue than simply, you know, the president going to war with the Catholic Church. If you are an individual who doesn't believe in this, you're still paying for it, and there's absolutely no way out of it for you. You're just going to pay for it, and you have to suck it up.
Talking to Ben, go ahead. Talking to Ben Swanch, Fox 19, he does Reality Check, and Reality Check airs on Fox 19 Evening News. Always encourage people to watch it. And Ben, what else are you going to be dealing with this week? We're almost out of time. I'm glad we delved into the specifics on the healthcare mandate and that there's more on the Reality Check series. But what else are you going to be doing this week?
Real quick, we are looking tonight, too, at this. You know, we talked last week about the caucus in Nevada. The caucus in Maine on Saturday. There are so many problems with this deal in Maine. But Brian, I can't even get into all of it right now, just to tell you that every time that I look into it and I turn over another stone, it's leading me to another one. It is a mess.
Shenanigans?
Actual shenanigans.
You're calling shenanigans.
I'm telling you that I just talked to a pastor who was the head of one group in Maine. He was the president of their little caucus in Belfast, and says when they finished, you know, they carried out all the business, they recorded the numbers, they sent them in. He calls 2 days later just to confirm, because he heard about all these problems going on in other caucus sites. He calls the state GOP and says, I want to confirm the numbers. They read back the numbers, and every one of them were wrong.
Jeez.
Not only that, but I talked yesterday to the head of the GOP for the state of Maine. I talked to him myself and said, on Saturday, when you all have additional caucuses, because, you know, they called Maine for Romney with only 84% of the vote counted, because they moved a couple of the caucuses to this week because of snow.
Huh.
They had fear of 4 inches of snow. This is Maine, okay?
Oh, that's nothing.
That's nothing.
That's like this dusting we've got out here. It's nothing.
Well, that's all they got was a light dusting. Apparently, the Girl Scouts had an event that same weekend that was not canceled, but they canceled the caucus over it. So they moved it to this weekend. And I asked them, I said, in the event that the numbers change out there this Saturday, because there's less than a 200 difference in the votes between Romney and Paul.
Right.
If the numbers change, are you all going to do what Iowa did and come back and say, we got it wrong, here's the real winner? He says, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. We're going to have to discuss it in March when our committee meets.
Oh, my gosh. Shenanigans.
So there is an absolute unraveling going on in Maine right now between moderate establishment Republicans and Tea Party Republicans who since 2010 apparently are turning the state upside down by taking over the Republican Party there, saying we want limited government, we want government out of our lives. They apparently Maine has become like kind of a ground zero for Tea Party revolution.
Good.
And it is an absolute mess. If this continues to go the way that it's going, I predict, and Romney is the nominee, I predict if Maine does not change anything, Obama will take Maine in November.
Well,
because there's no way you're going to disenfranchise that many voters by saying, you know what, it's just a straw poll, it doesn't really matter. And they've actually said it. It's just a straw poll, it doesn't really matter.
What's the point of the exercise then, Ben Swan? Thanks for the info. Shenanigans declared in Maine. We'll be watching on Reality Check on Fox 19 every evening. Thanks again, Ben. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you then.
838-55 KRC.